Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, in discussing the latest mass school shooting, President Trump never mentioned guns, but called the murders a mental health issue. Well, best-selling author and journalist Pete Early is a mental health advocate and author of Crazy, A Father's Search Through America's Mental Health Madness. And yesterday he spoke with our Debbie Moderay.
First of all, I disagree with the president saying that it's a mental health issue. Now, we do know that Virginia Tech and the shootings in Tucson and Aurora and Newtown and the Navy Yard were all clearly linked to someone with a serious mental illness. We also know that there were warning signs, and that if we'd had adequate and good community health care, there's a good chance that somebody could have intervened and helped. But what you have to do is rifle backward, I guess, and look, and you'll notice that the American Psychiatric Association shows that only 1% of all mass shootings in the country involve someone with a mental illness like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. We tend to assume that anyone who would do something so horrific is mentally ill. The truth is the majority of people who do these shootings are angry, basically young, white men who feel like they've been slighted or they're upset about something. So my son had a breakdown when he was in college, and this is very common. This is the age when a lot of mental illnesses like bipolar disorder, which is my son, first emerged. Of course, he was upset. He wanted to know what was going on. I was freaking out. He had been wandering around New York for 5 days. He hadn't slept. He was convinced God had him on a special mission. He was hearing voices. We raced from Manhattan to Fairfax County, Virginia, outside Washington, D.C., where I live. During that ride, he would laugh 1 minute and he'd cry the next. And he said, "Dad, how would you feel if someone killed himself?" I took him to an emergency room. That doctor came in with his hands raised like he was surrendering and said, "I'm sorry, Mr. Early, I can't help your son." I said, "Why?" He said, "The law says someone has to be a danger to themselves or others before I can require them to undergo treatment. And a large percentage of people, when they become psychotic, don't think anything's wrong with them." The doctor actually said to me, "Bring your son back after he tries to harm or kill you or harm or kill someone else." And we left that emergency room untreated. Imagine telling a heart attack person that. We went home. 48 hours later, he got sicker and sicker. He slipped out of the house. He broke into a stranger's house. He broke in to take a bubble bath. And he became one of the 2.2 million Americans with serious mental illness who are arrested every year in this country, one of the 365,000 who are in our jails and prisons. And that is wrong. I tried to get him help, and I couldn't get him help. And for instance, the Tucson shooter, his parents knew but were blocked. The Virginia Tech shooter knew, finally got somebody to pay attention, and he fell through the cracks. So there is a mental health breakdown here. Trying to get someone in to help is nearly impossible, even if they want help. The biggest reforms in mental health in the last decade have not come from advocates. They have come from sheriffs and police departments. They've come from policemen see every day more people who are in psychotic distress than psychiatrists do. And so we've turned a mental health problem into a criminal justice problem. We expect the police and our criminal justice system to take care of people who cannot get help in the communities. Why can't people get help in the communities? Well, first of all, there's a lack of services, but also remember that almost 60% of psychiatrists refuse to take any kind of Medicaid, which is the biggest supplier of mental health, or insurance. You have to have cash out of your pocket. Well, if you are homeless on the streets of St. Louis and you are psychotic, you don't have money to go see a psychiatrist or the insight to do that. And so it becomes a police problem when it should be a community mental health problem. And mental health doesn't mean just sticking a pill in someone's mouth. It means housing. It means jobs. It means helping people get their life back together. And instead of doing that, let me give you a quick example. In Missouri, it costs $22,000 a year to keep someone in a state prison, okay? For that, about that same amount, you can give someone a house, housing first, an apartment, a place to live, and give them a team of experts to come check on them and try to help them. If you give them housing and a team, you have an 80% success rate. If you just put them in jail and spend that $22,000, you have an 85% recidivism rate. People with mental health spend 5 times longer in jails and prisons. They cost 3 to 4 times more. It's just a waste. We're spending the money. We just aren't getting anything for it.
That's Pete Early. Once again, he is a best-selling author and journalist, a mental health advocate, author of Crazy, A Father's Search Through America's Mental Health Madness. He was in St. Louis to participate in a panel discussion at the Clark Fox Policy Institute at Washington University and was the keynote speaker at Providence Annual Spirit of Providence Gala. Thank you very much, Debbie Monterey, for conducting that interview and then passing it along to me to play this morning. Some very important information. And when you talk to police officers and police chiefs and sheriff's deputies, they'll tell you that they now spend more time, if at least as much, if not more, dealing with mental health cases. And they're just not really trained to do that. They're becoming trained. They're doing more to learn how to handle those cases. But the mental health system has been cut back quite a bit over the years. I believe it was in Missouri over so many years, like 10 years, they cut $100 million from it, and they've added about $10 million back. Well, that still leaves you a lot, $90 million in the hole by my math. And so it's easy to say it's a mental health issue, but there is a lot more to it. And until we tackle the problem on all fronts, I think we're going to continue to find these problems. We're going to find these cases, and you look at the horror that we saw in Florida and we have seen elsewhere, and doggone it, America, let's do something about it. It's 628 News coming up.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.